We're linking up with Belfast. And in the meantime, though, friends, while we're doing this, I want to mark your card, so to speak, CIE Tours International. CIE Tours, they offer the greatest variety of tours to Ireland. So if it's in your bones to take it easy, and if you are heading for Ireland anytime, there are over 50 different coach tours to choose from. And itineraries from 5 days to, you know, 3-4 weeks, whatever suits you. Fully inclusive tours with local, friendly, and indeed very intelligent tour guides. Log on to CIETours.com for the information, which will be helpful to you, or you can call 1-800-243-8687. Friends, we go live to Belfast, and indeed we go live to a very good friend of ours. In his political career, first of all, you're very welcome, Martin O'Muilor.
Thank you, Adrian. Great to be talking to you.
Listen, as a member of a prominent Sinn Féin member of the Northern Ireland Assembly, managing director of Belfast Media Group and a publisher of the Irish Echo in the U.S., the sixth annual New York New Belfast Conference is taking place again on Thursday and Friday at Fordham University Lincoln Center on the campus. A great event, but all records would be broken in terms of your delegation coming from Belfast to New York this week.
Yeah, Adrian, I think we're going to cross in mid-Atlantic because you're very privileged to be attending the Global Diaspora Conference that the Irish government is organizing on Wednesday and Thursday of this week. And, of course, we'll bring a large delegation out from Belfast for the sixth annual New York, New Belfast Conference. And as you know, in Belfast, we disagree about many things, and you've seen that within the last 7 days as well. But what we do agree on is the need for investment, the need for tourism, the need to grow the city, the need for jobs. And I'm very pleased that this year, for the first time, there will be representatives of every party in the Stormont Assembly will be at the New York New Belfast Conference. And in fact, we have a small number of independents in the Assembly as well. And one of those, a unionist independent, John McAllister, will be there. So
yeah.
I think we're putting, and I suppose we all do this, it's a bit like when you visit your neighbour's home or your in-laws area, we always put on a good face. And I think that despite our disagreements and the arguments at home over very serious issues, that you will find a common front at New York, New Belfast, that people will make common cause to thank Irish America for its great support for the peace process, but also to encourage people to visit, not least, I heard you mention the CIE Tours, and it's been a great thrill for us in recent years that so many of the CIE Tours have come north, and particularly have come to Belfast, Titanic Belfast. So expect an upbeat story from Belfast, despite some of the difficulties we've been having in the political process.
Yes. Can we focus on the impasse in Northern Ireland, in the Assembly, and in fact the threat that we hear and read about, that the Northern Ireland Assembly, which was long and hard fought for, and through the Good Friday Agreement became a reality, that it could collapse. It could collapse, you know, any day. Yeah. And can we separate the wheat from the chaff here?
Well, I think the word impasse is probably the best word and the most opposite. I don't think it's a crisis yet, but it has the makings of a very difficult time ahead if we don't find a way out of the cul-de-sac we're in at the minute. And what is happening is that you have a British government, and we've known this for some time, Adrian, that has detached itself quite significantly from the peace process, which really has a one-size-fits-all approach to budgets. So therefore, there have been really swinging cuts to the budgets of the Stormont executive. So they have taken out around $2.25 billion out of the grant, the block grant, which comes from the block payment, which comes from London, because 95% of our taxation, of course, goes to London, and therefore our expenditure, which is about $16 billion a year, that comes back in one grant. So if you think $16 billion, we've lost about $2.25 over the last 5 years, and the British government has now said, steel yourselves, because you're going to lose another $1.5 billion out of that grant. And what Martin McGuinness has said at this stage is that we have a number of core reasons for being in government. One is that we want to provide public services which are efficient, which are value for money, and which can provide an excellent service to everyone in the community. And we want to protect the vulnerable. We believe that social justice is a key pillar of all our work, that it is a test of government, how well you protect the vulnerable. And in both those matters, we're on a collision course with the British government, because they really want to have a like it or lump it approach. They're saying your budgets will be cut, you will be penalised if you don't impose more cuts on the less well off, on the adults with disabilities, severe disabilities, children with disabilities, handicapped children, as it would say in the state, the long term ill, and large families. So you're right. We voted down a budget. We voted down an attempt by the unionist parties last week to force through cuts in welfare payments to the unemployed and to the poor and to the sick, and that has led us to this impasse. And next Tuesday, I believe, there will be an attempt by all the governments to try and see if there's a way through this impasse and this logjam. What is really important to me is that Gary Hart, who was appointed by Secretary John Kerry as his envoy effectively here, who did great work in putting together the Stormont House Agreement before Christmas, that he's back engaged, that we see American politicians, their radar has gone up. They know that they need to find a way through this difficult period, and we really need American involvement, because you referenced the Good Friday Agreement now a long time ago. 1998 seems like a long time ago, but it wouldn't have happened without American involvement, and it's the same. Every milestone we have passed, every step forward has come because of successive administrations in Washington, Republican and Democrat, and the commitment of Irish America to stay the course. So, I mean, that will be one of the messages I think we take to America this week, that we need Irish America to fight for a fair deal for everyone and to keep the peace process on course and moving forward. But it will take a masterful approach and a lot of flexibility, I have no doubt, in the time ahead, because Martin McGuinness has said, and he speaks for Sinn Féin in the Assembly, he said it's no longer sustainable. If you keep on cutting the budgets, what are we in power for? So it's a difficult period ahead.
A dozen of us, including your editor of the Irish Echo, Ray O'Hanlon, had a breakfast meeting with Senator Gary Hart this week in New York. And I may be talking out of school, so I'll be somewhat cautious with this, but Senator Gary Hart, by his own admission, has said that, you know, he needs to be invited back. He can't come in, you know, like a bulldozer at this stage of the game. But he, I think he is more than aware of the crisis or the near crisis, because this can easily become a crisis or, in fact, saner heads can prevail and maybe something will come out of this. It doesn't help the situation the First Minister of the Northern Ireland Assembly, Peter Robinson, got ill this weekend. We wish him well, as I know you do, and most people. So that the circumstances are not great, but I do want to you to just focus for a couple of minutes, if you will, on the impact for the marginalized, for those who are most in need of the financial support that customarily did come from London. I won't get into the touchy area because it doesn't serve any purpose, of whether, this is a punitive measure coming from from London or not, because that's immaterial at this stage of the game. But who and why is the welfare reform, the one issue that you can't ignore, that apparently can't be, agreed to in Northern Ireland?
Yeah. Well, I think it's because one of the things that really buoys me when I go to Fordham University for our conference is when you go on the Fordham University's website, on its home page, when it talks about its mission, the Jesuits who founded Fordham talk about social justice. And social justice goes to the core of what we in Sinn Féin are in politics for and what we believe in. And that dictates that we will not allow policies, and they wrap them in this word austerity, but we will not allow policies which punish the poor. So what has happened, I suppose, the whole ideology of austerity is that those with who don't have the broadest shoulders, those who are least able to take the weight, they have to suffer the greatest cuts. And we think that's morally wrong, it's economically wrong and politically wrong, but it's not something that we can accept. If we have to endure pain, then everybody endures pain. The well-off have to do their share as well. And what actually the British ideology is that 80% of the pain must be carried by people at the bottom of the economic ladder. So there is that's a collision. That's a collision because our ideology and the British ideology do not beat in that, or the London ministers. We have said instead, we said, give us the economic powers. Let us have taxation raising powers here. Let us keep our income tax. We have a sales tax here, a value added tax, stamp duty, et cetera, et cetera. But the London ministers say no, they will set taxation levels to suit them. But at the same time, they will then decide what we get back. So their priorities are not our priorities, and we won't bend on this. And I just want to say one personal story, Adrian. One of the main thrusts of this welfare cut is that those with large families are capped. And that is, if you're someone who's four children, and you become sick with, for example, multiple sclerosis, MS, your benefits will be capped. Now, in the 1960s, I'm from a family of seven. My father was a teacher who took very ill, and for 3 years he couldn't work. And during that period, there was a safety net, and our safety net in Europe is more generous than the American safety net. Mm-hmm. But there was a safety net for my father at that time. He was a young man in the 60s, seven children, to get through that period, and then became a teacher for 30 years after that, God rest him. And I won't accept that the London ministers have the right to say those with large families, when they're unemployed now, they will not get the benefits they have been entitled to. If they fall ill, they will not get the benefits they have been entitled to. So we are at loggerheads, and the Tory government have no votes here. They did stand candidates. They got 9,000 votes. So the Tories, in my view, don't have the mandate to do this. And I do hope that Senator Hart, of course, is right that he has to be invited in. But I hope the American administration is saying to the British and to the Irish government, look, we need these guys at the table, because Americans, in my view, especially Irish Americans, but Americans get it. They know it's about fair play. And one of the things is, if you look where the highest poverty is, it's in areas where unemployment has been high, because employment opportunities are not located in those areas. So, you know, there's a linkage here over many years. Employment opportunities were placed in East Belfast, and fair play to them, but they weren't placed in Derry City, they weren't placed in Strabane, they weren't placed in West Belfast. So, of course, those places have a higher level of welfare recipients. And just to add to that, Adrian, the places where the poor lived were also the places where the violence was worst, where the conflict was worst, where the trouble was at its darkest. And in those areas, there are, of course, people who still suffer trauma, who suffer grief, who are under huge pressure because of those years. And this is something the British don't want to accept. They want to say, well, you're just like this. British is Finchley, as Margaret Thatcher used to say, that there is no special circumstances here. But I think that for many reasons, not least our 30 years of terrible darkness, that there are special circumstances, and we need to accommodate and cater for those who have lost out because of the conflict and other reasons.
I want to go back to a short time ago when you served as Lord Mayor of Belfast. And we were invited by your good self to spend, several days in Belfast, where we spoke and we recorded through your good offices, not just members of the Sinn Féin party, but across the board. We had... we were able to interview loyalists, unionists, the SDLP, all of the parties, the independents. There was one common theme from those interviews and from our experience there, and that was that a new day has dawned, that Belfast, and in fact, Northern Ireland had now not only the will, but also the development of a reins to manage themselves. It would appear that, and I think it's very important to let our audience and the world know, this is not an infighting issue in Northern Ireland and the Assembly, that this is basically, this could be rectified by a change of attitude and a level of commitment, from the British Parliament, from London, that could fix this if they have the will and if they have the interest in allowing Northern Ireland to move forward at the rapid pace that it has, particularly over the last few years.
Yeah, and that word interest, I think, is the key word, because I do see a disinterest from the Tory government, from the Conservatives, who now are a majority, that they really, sometimes it seems to me, they don't really care. I'm convinced that we have turned a corner, that we're not going back to the terrible past that we had. But to build a peace, you do need always to make progress. And narrative is very important. I mean, one of the reasons we have so many tourists in Belfast today is because of the work of people like yourself, Adrian, and others who have said, this is a great place to visit. Come and enjoy the buzz. Come and enjoy the warmth of the welcome. And that is bearing fruit. So narrative is important. And I would be really dismayed and distressed if the Stormont Executive the power sharing executive was to fall, because the message does go out, oh, there are problems there, oh, they've had a bump in the road, do we want to visit Belfast? And to keep a positive message, I think we really need the executive to stay up, as it were, and to move forward. But the changes that have happened here are, in my view, are miraculous, and not least because of the huge investment by American U.S. companies in Belfast. And really, there is no city of our size in the U.S. that has as many American blue chip companies as we have. It really is a wonderful tale, and it's our intention that we continue to attract those companies, that they have a good story to tell. Increasingly, American companies are locating their key executive staff in Belfast. The Chicago Mercantile Exchange is in Belfast, but they moved 9 families over. A company called Market Research Partners from Philadelphia have recently moved 9 or 10 people, including Jack Butler, who's a great friend of ours, with Irish American Philadelphia, have made their home here. So, you know, we are making great progress, and we need to say, all of us together need to say to the British, get engaged. It can be good for you too, but you need to really admit, you need to face your responsibilities. The amount of money needed is 0.001% of the British annual budget, so it's small beer. But what we have found, sadly, Adrian, and there was another shocking documentary on what they call BBC National TV out of London this week about the past collusion between government forces and government police forces here and loyalist paramilitaries. And the British government didn't comment on the programme. You know, it's headlines here. It's a huge documentary programme.
But it's also headlines. Shocking.
The disinterest and disengagement is really very worrying.
But it's also headline news in Britain, and we would be at a loss to imagine that a great number of British people who are and have every reason to be happy about Northern Ireland, about the progress, it's difficult to think that they don't care. So maybe that pressure coming from the British, if that were to be boosted by the U.S. as has happened in the past, this could happen. But I would venture to guess that listeners to this program and many who have had a positive input and indeed should take some credit for the Good Friday Agreement and the aftermath. You know, if I think we should be, you know, going, not relying on whether Gary Hart has has an invitation, and if so, is that invitation, it's not, you know, just as the invitation from the parties in Northern Ireland to have Gary Hart come in at this stage of the game. He can be and should be the conduit to the White House, to our own State Department here. The clock is ticking and very little is happening. And maybe some of that has to do with the fact that most Americans are of the opinion that the Assembly in Northern Ireland, that Ireland, the inward investments, that the employment opportunities, that everything is rosy there. So leave them alone. I think we're at the point where we have to just get American involvement because we're way past the old cliche that, you know, Americans should mind their own business and whatever. This is where the key is, and the time is nigh.
And when you think of the many Irish American business organizations and large organizations which have been very supportive of the peace process. You know, they often the introductions which led to New York Stock Exchange coming to Belfast are all state. Our Liberty Mutual is here as well. Our Chicago Mercantile Exchange are the great company, Concentrix, which is a West Coast company, and so on. Often the introductions came from Irish-American business organizations. So what I would like is, I would really like the Ireland Funds, the Irish-American Partnership in Boston, the Ireland Institute in Pittsburgh, the Irish-American Business Chamber Network in Philadelphia, through their own networks, they should be sending the message to the British government and to their contacts. This needs to be sorted. Obviously, these groups, I wouldn't suggest that they should take any type of party political partisan stand, but they should be making their views known as well, that really we need to sort out these difficulties, because if we want to continue to attract American investment and American tourism, we need to continue to make progress. And that's something that I would like to see happen. The peace that has been won is because of Irish America, so I wouldn't like anyone to stand back and think that it will be sorted without the active, engaged involvement of Irish America.
The conference, the New York, New Belfast conference, yeah, is very timely. This week in particular, I think that one of the underlying fears and issues that will be addressed here is exactly as you have analyzed and proposed yourself. You know, you don't have a cross community delegation coming to to Fordham Lincoln Center here to sit down and to talk about the betterment of a Northern Ireland, if in fact they're just waiting to see what happens next. And I think that apathy may play, you know, a huge role. Again, just going back to my own observation that most Americans think that Ireland, not only is Ireland, the island of Ireland, better because of the Assembly in Northern Ireland, but that the message has not reached those who simply assume that that's politics for you. You know, that type of attitude, I think, is more damaging than anything else.
Well, I suppose one of the great things about the New York, New Belfast conference is that it does bring together people who are positive about the future, people who often have made an investment in Belfast or who have been here, who want to come here. We go to the Fordham Lincoln Center, and we're very fortunate in that it really is the hub of all things Belfast or Northern Irish or Ulster in New York. And often our friends in New York, and many of them from all walks of life, from community, from culture, from arts, from politics, from business, who come to the conference, I think it gives us great heart that the path we're on is the right path. And of course, it's not the number one priority, Adrian, is to embed the peace, enhance the peace. And I think we've done that. And then the next stage is to create these bridges of mutual benefit. And one of the things that has really cheered me this year is that on the Friday of conference, because the opening night on the 4th, we really concentrated on arts and culture and a lot of presentations, including on the new Irish Arts Centre, but also on the Titanic Belfast here. But we have a luncheon on the Friday, really, for companies with operations, big companies often with operations in the US and in Ireland, North and South. And this year we have a higher turnout from that than ever before. And that, I think, reflects for me the progress that's being made, that people say we want to be associated with this is a good story. Many of these companies have significant investments in Belfast. Tyco, for example, has a world R&D centre in Belfast, and I'm very pleased that they're bringing people in. A smaller company called NaviNet in Boston are sending two people down. K-YAN, which is a credit payment system, is bringing people in. Of course, United, Aer Lingus, Bank of Ireland, but also lots of technology companies, some on the West Coast. And that, for me, signals that look, people get this, that this is a good place to invest and do business in. And I think we have to use that interest to say to those who want to move backwards, look, this is a great opportunity. Other people realise the potential of the city of Belfast and of the north of Ireland. So those of us who live here, we have to make sure we don't spurn this opportunity. Often it's people who come here from outside who haven't been here in 5 or 6 years. They're the people who really can see the difference, who really can see the changes. And I think we need to be sure that we not only embrace and cherish all those who have made investments here who come here, and I think also CIE Tours people who will be there, and the United and Aer Lingus who are bringing people in, plus Tourism Ireland. I think we need to do our part. And for me, our first part is we work like hell to save these institutions, to try and create a way that is sustainable going forward, that we have a proper budget going forward. Because when I think of all the work that has gone on and all the some of the physical investments, some of the visiting, some of the hard work to try and turn around the story from Belfast, I think it's incumbent upon us to do our bit. And when we bring the Belfast message to New York, part of it is to say thank you for what you've done, but also to say that we want to create more partnerships, more alliances of mutual benefit. Together we have done, I mean, I'm old enough to remember the terrible days here, Adrian.
I know.
So together, together with Irish America, we have done miraculous work, but we need now to press home and not to let ourselves be deflected or be pushed back.
You know, finally, I would like to point out that there's an American stake in all of this. The huge influx of large and some smaller American companies into Belfast, they deserve support too. They didn't go in for, you know, for tax benefits, and that's a whole other story. They came to stay, so they deserve, you know, American goodwill and involvement. And I think we have a lot of work to do here, but that will be after. You know, the conference, the New York, New Belfast conference again on this Thursday evening, and all day Friday. I have to make that quick trip to Dublin, but I will be back, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, if I can finish with this. First of all, we're really pleased that Tom DiNapoli, the controller of New York State, will address the luncheon, be our guest speaker in the luncheon on the Friday, because last year he wrote a check for $15 million, the biggest ever investment in an equity fund here for startups. That, of course, is the pension funds of ordinary New York workers, teachers, and so on in New York, and we really appreciate that. And that's an example, I think, of what you're talking about, not only the tycoons and the Ian and the big companies, but actually here's ordinary New York workers putting their money where their mouth is to support the peace process. But it's worth saying as well, of course, a highlight of the New York New Belfast Conference is the presentation of the Irish American of the Year Award by the Irish Echo. This year, it's been moved to a Friday night because our guest of honour will be in Dublin on the Thursday. And, of course, that's you, Adrian. So we're delighted that you will be back to be at the residence on Friday night. We have great admiration for everything that you and Anya do. And it's wonderful you'll be able to be with us in the residence of the Consul General of Ireland, Barbara Jones, whose last posting was Belfast, another great Belfast, New York connection. And that, for me, is something to look forward to.
Well, obviously, I'm thrilled and I am honoured, and I wouldn't miss that for the world. Good luck. And for those, indeed, who would like, again, to participate in this conference or to find out more about it, can you give us is there a website? Is there a phone number? Should they contact the Echo?
There is, of course. I actually hope if people go to irishecho.com that there'll be a banner ad there, and it would be there last night to get them across to the conference for details and registration. But also the website is Aisling, as in A-I-S-L-I-N-G, Aisling, the Irish Aisling, aisling-events.com. But probably the easier way in is just the irishjackal.com website and the banner out across. And I look forward to seeing many, many of our friends again this week in New York.
It will also be, the information and the contact will be also carried on our own website and on Facebook and on irishradio.com website. It will be an interesting week, and it is indeed, I think it's timely, that the conference just happens to, which was long scheduled, that this will take place, and that hopefully at this stage, that the that a resolution to the thorny issues in Northern Ireland, which are very, very serious, that those will be resolved. Either way, again, I'm looking forward very much to I'll catch the tail end of the conference, and I am absolutely honoured to accept the Irish Echo Irish American of the Year Award. I thank you, and
thank
look
you.
Forward to seeing you. Okay.
Martin. Thank you. Nice talk to you, lad. Thank you. Good luck. Slán go fóin.
Slán. Martin O'Muilor, their friends, live from Belfast, a Belfast which deserves our goodwill and support, and we can do a lot here. I think that rattling sabers here is very important, and we realize that in fact we the collapse of the assembly in Northern Ireland is very scary prospect, but it is real and it can happen. And we in America here have played an active and consistent role in Northern Ireland and the Good Friday Agreement and the establishment of the Assembly. To pick up the phone to get in touch with our representatives at every level. It doesn't even have to be Congress or the Senate, but to alert those who think everything is hunky-dory in Northern Ireland and we should be looking at other areas to become involved in, or all of them again, some of them very real and deserving. Northern Ireland needs support now from the United States, and that support starts with us. Let's get on the phones. Let's start. And this has to be done yesterday.